There are many things that we say we believe. I believe you can do it. I believe it. I really do. But when the decisive moment comes for us personally, we often find the struggle, the courage. We struggle with the courage to actually act on what we say we believe, particularly if we are called to venture out into scary places. Blondin's story is a parable we all understand, don't we? We know scary. We know scary. This is a story that focuses us on the edges of our belief. Martin Luther King once said, "Our ultimate measure is not where we stand in times of comfort and convenience, but where we stand in times of challenge and controversy." Those times are piercingly personal. They're not so much death-defying as they are life-defining. When we look closely at ourselves in those challenging times, we don't always like what we see, do we? If we are honest, we have to admit that we may be nurturing some sort of cowering couch potato kind of faith that likes to watch others do things that are courageous. Too often we remain silent. Too often we fail to step forward. In a time when ignorance, fear, and hate consume our nation like a medieval plague, our allegiance to God, who said, "Do not be afraid," seems a bit thin. Do you know that "be not afraid" is the most repeated commandment in the entire Bible? Be not afraid. Be not afraid. As Jesus crossed the border between Galilee and Samaria, he grew thirsty in the hot sun of the midday, and he stopped at a well. But he had no bucket to draw from the well. And just then, a woman with a bucket happened by. And this moment is one of the most significant in the entire Bible. Imagine that, one person said. Jesus is thirsty, and you've got a bucket. This encounter goes on for 42 verses, 27 more than what I read to you just a few moments ago, which means that Jesus talked longer to this woman than he did to anybody else in the entire Bible. He talked to her longer than any of his disciples. And in fact, he talked longer to her than he did to any member of his own family. This interaction is absolutely mind-boggling, because this particular woman is someone that Jesus should have had nothing to do with. First of all, she was a Samaritan. And you'll remember that Samaritans, while related to the Jews, were despised by them, seen as half-breeds, and their history of hating each other goes back for decades. They were seen as Babylonian idol worshippers. And now Babylon, you'll remember, is where modern Iraq and Syria are today. Hated people, those people. The hatred and fear of those two groups was longstanding. Yet Jesus encounters the Samaritan. Second, this is a woman. In that time, the status of women was clearly prescribed. They were not allowed to worship with men. Women had no place in public life and were not to be seen or heard by holy men who did not even speak to their wives in public. Three, she was a Samaritan, she was a woman, but that's not all. She was apparently also a fallen woman. Respectable women, you'll remember, or perhaps you don't, go to the well in the cool of the morning to collect their water and have an opportunity to chat with the other women of the village. They can get comfortable and stay there a while. This was a woman that they chatted about. And in fact, the fact that she showed up at noon to draw water is a clear sign that she was not acceptable with those others who came early in the day to collect water. So imagine this woman's surprise when she comes alone at midday with her bucket balanced on her head, and she sees this strange man sitting at the well. And when he lifts his head and asks for a drink, she sees that he's a Jew. What is he doing here? Why is he even talking to me? She wonders. An incredible moment. At this well in Samaria, Jesus fearlessly ventures out and crosses significant geographic, cultural, and religious borders to offer this woman, this Samaritan, this fallen woman, the gift of God's salvation, and calls it living water. Step back for a moment and take a full view of Jesus' ministry. We encounter in him someone who at every turn offers a radical message of reconciliation and grace. Time and again, he went where no one else dared to go, talked to people that no one else dared to talk to, touched people that no one else dared to touch, crossing borders of difference and overcoming barriers of exclusion to demonstrate the breadth and depth of God's radical love. At almost every passage in the Bible, you'll see that it ends, the little story ends, and it says, and the people were astounded. And the people were astounded. He astounded people with his borderland ministry. Today, we who call ourselves Jesus followers have to ask, so, okay, where are the borderlands of our time? And how willing are we to go there? Where is the prophetic edge that our lives embody? Who are the new Samaritans on our path? What living water do we have to offer to them? Now, there are many borderlands, aren't there? We know of the borderlands between the United States and Mexico. Oh, do we know those borders? Israel and Syria, Pakistan and India. We scan the globe, and from the borders of Northern Ireland to Western Somalia, from Eastern Europe to Southern Korea, we cannot think of these borders without a sense of tragedy and fear. But as worrisome as these geographic borders are, I'm even more concerned today about the borders of social, gender, racial, ethnic, and above all, religious difference that separate us and confound us. It is our failings in these latter borderlands that are most often the cause of the trouble in the geographic ones. And if not the direct cause, then they function like steroids that grossly exaggerate differences and make them wider and more volatile and tragically more violent. In the last decade, since 9/11, we have all witnessed the rise of an anxiety, paranoid, and fear-filled America. Do you know that 1/3 of all new homes that are being built in the U.S. today are in exclusive gated communities, and that urban planners now regularly talk about the landscape of fear when they design things? When it comes to dealing with those who are different from us and those whom we fear, our only solutions seem to be to violently crush them or to build walls to keep them out. And of course, this very strategy is one that denies us any opportunity of building a relationship with them. And therefore, it only compounds our ignorance, which is the primary cause of fear. It's a disease that is spreading. Our angst about those who are different from us has gone global and distinguished itself by its clumsy, ill-informed, adolescent, testosterone-filled, and muscle-flexing character. Rarely has a nation been so divided and blind to the ways in which fear is tearing at its core identity. Our growing isolation and fear and lack of skill in navigating the borders of difference in our lives is sadly at the root of so many culture wars and political tensions and military conflicts. There is a high price to pay for our fear of others and our absolute dysfunction in the borderlands of difference. The metaphor of frontier has never been more apt. The difference is it's no longer things like the space frontier. It's the space between us. It's not oil. It's what lubricates the gears of human relationships. It isn't food. It's the tragic gulf of powerful warring factions who prevent food from being distributed. It isn't even the military, but rather the ignorance and fear that makes us think that more guns and violence are the only answers to dealing with this question of difference. What are we to do as we encounter the 21st century Samaritans and outcasts? Are we to build walls, spit on them, marginalize them, mock them, dehumanize them, shoot them? Or can we confront our fears and put our hand into God's and walk out onto that incredibly exciting and perhaps fearful space and step into a different world? Can we, as the prophet Isaiah says, gather the outcasts and make God's house a place for all peoples? You and I here are sojourners. We live in a world whose geography, both literally and symbolically, is just like that place between Galilee and Samaria that where a thirsty Jesus walked so long ago. We encounter people daily who are not like us. They are people that our society tells us to reject and scorn and fear. But if we are true to our calling, then we have to recognize that it's exactly at that moment, right there when the stakes are the highest, that's where we have been called to serve. That's our moment. In those borderland moments, we have a chance to give others the clearest glimpse of what it is that we talk about when we say the love and grace of God. It's that moment when we encounter those who are different. We are called not to build walls, but to tear them down. We are called not to stand our ground, but to overcome the ground between us. We are called not to widen the gulf, but to repair the breach. It demands courageous living, not cowering listlessness, faith-filled visions, not fear-filled nightmares. The courage of faith is our secret weapon, you see. It's our secret weapon. It is more powerful than fear, because God is more powerful than death. Faith calls us into the liminality of living and to courageously navigate the worlds of darkness and light, of hope and fear. The borderlands to which faith beckons us are amazing places, because there the roles are reversed. The rejected are embraced, the marginalized are centralized, the first are last, and the last are first. It is a place of transformation. It is holy ground. We take off our shoes. This then is our calling, to go to the edge and minister in the borderlands. Yes, anxiety will come and fear will lurk in the shadows. But the radical good news of God's love will not be known to the hungry, to the victimized, and to the lost souls of this earth unless there are a courageous few who are prepared to say, "Here am I, send me." Fear will be enthroned and death will hold sway unless someone says, "Put me in that damn wheelbarrow and wheel me out." No matter whom you are, your station in life, your race, your age, how wealthy you are, how poor you are called to be a border crosser. Young, old, gay, straight, male, female, transgendered, tall, short, fat, skinny, it doesn't matter. We have one message from the Bible repeatedly for us. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Thus says the Lord who formed you, the God who created you, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. And when you pass through waters, I will be with you. And through rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you will not be burned, and the flame will not consume you. You are precious in my sight and honored, and I love you. Do not fear, for I am with you. You are my witnesses. Amen.